We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Welcome to the news quiz coming from the Haymarket Theatre in Leicester. We start with a horoscope from Tuesday's Metro newspaper, read by Charlotte Green.
Aquarius, with the sharp end of Mars pointed at Uranus, you're in an uncomfortable position.
Thanks to Jane Tuckwell for that. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and a newcomer, comedian and writer John Oliver. Challenging them on my left, Alan Corran and Eve Pollard. Jeremy, who had a humbling experience when he tried to prove he had the right stuff?
Oh, clue in the question. The Prime Minister, who is still Tony Blair and I think is going to be for a long time, actually, he began the week by likening his relationship with the British people to a relationship in which crockery was being thrown. I'm not sure the domestic violence motif was really a good idea, but he... He said that it was kind of like a romance that was hitting a rocky pier, and I suppose in a way that is true about our, you know, because the only reason that he is in power is that Britain had lived in a miserable, abusive relationship with the Tories for 18 years. Meets a man who gives them red roses, and they're just off. You know. Just, a kind word was enough. But he did a lot of telly. He was on Channel 5 all day. And a woman approached him, and he freaked a bit. And then later, I saw it at 7, he was looking really, really scared and thinking, this is a really bad idea that I've let the public come within stabbing distance. But the fearful look is not good for... He should watch George Bush, who always just looks completely confused.
You've got to wonder why he's doing all of this, though. He's going on all these programmes. It's clearly to try and get young people more interested in politics, which, you know, isn't hard to get them more interested than they are at the moment, which is not interested really at all. And it's not going to be hard to increase the turnout. No, our last general election, we had the lowest turnout since 1918, when, to be fair, people were a bit busy being dead.
This week, Tony Blair unveiled his new masochistic election strategy when he was interviewed on 4 Channel 5 programmes in a single day. Mr Blair refused to comment when asked by an irate nurse if he would wipe somebody else's backside for £5 an hour. It's well known he would kiss somebody's backside. John, welcome to the news quiz.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, I felt I should be grateful, but instead I've just been rude and interrupted you.
No, you
could
don't get a fee, you realise.
Could I thank both of you at this point?
Yeah.
Thank you both.
You're welcome.
John, welcome to the news quiz.
Thank you.
John, where did the end of election campaigning turn out to be sheer bliss?
Oh, this is the Iraqi elections, isn't it?
2 points.
Thank you. It's easier than it looks, this quiz. What I was amazed by was the interim Prime Minister, Alawi. He said that he thought the results, when they finally come in, would end all violence in Iraq. What I found amazing about that was not just that he said it in the first place, but that he didn't then feel the need to follow it up by winking at the camera. The problem they're going to run into as well is that whoever wins isn't going to match Saddam Hussein's approval rating, which was 95%. And if you're in that 5% at the end, you are on a one-way trip to the back of a van. But this is the problem they'll run into if they try and depose anyone. If they try and depose Mugabe, at their last election, one township in Zimbabwe registered a 110% turnout. So you can say what you like about the lad. He's on a one-man war against apathy. All I'm saying is dictators get a bad press. Yes, not in their own countries, but the point stands.
In the Iraqi elections, the Shia Alliance polled nearly 50% of the vote. Many people have warned of the effects of a tragic split between Sunni and Shia, though they were never the same after I got you, babe. Eve, welcome back. Who's hoping to win gold with a capital idea?
Well, this must be Ken Livingstone, who has actually arranged for 16 members of the International Olympic Committee to come over here with military precision, because he's trying to con them that London works. We all know it doesn't. So they've all come over at half term, so half the place is empty. There's no roadworks anywhere. And he's turned the red lights and the green lights and the yellow lights. I don't know what they're for, but he's turned them on so that they work.
Your driver does even.
So they turn them on so that they work, so you don't sit for hours waiting for some phantom pedestrians to cross the road.
But then he wonderfully shafted it.
I think Ken is to be commended on his very timely remarks, which would probably put the Olympic Committee off, and we won't have it. It will go to Paris, or indeed Leicester, and I wish you well of it. Jolly nice to spend £5 billion on nothing except watching a lot of people on steroids bumping into one another.
But the train is brilliant, because this Olympic javelin, that's the beautiful twist, it's actually a javelin. And you just get on it like a witch would a broom, and Steve Backley throws you just short of your destination.
The marathon is going to be a disaster, though, isn't it? Because all these people turn up from all over the world and find they've got to wear, like, divers' suits and dress up as chickens and things.
This week, VIPs from the International Olympic Committee visited London to assess the capital's bid to host the 2012 Games. However, opponents of the Olympic bid fear it may be the biggest waste of public money since Princess Michael of Kent. Alan, listen to this. Plans have made some feel decidedly queasy.
This is Michael Howard.
It is.
He's going to stand there at Folkestone, and if you have dandruff or an undescended testicle, you will not be allowed to. You will not be allowed to become British. It's this ongoing nonsensical immigration debate where they're all stealing one another's awful, dirty, filthy washing and their bogus plans, and the Tories have now come up with this plan to keep out people who are suffering from anything. Well, I was going to say, you have to be like Steve Redgrave. Poor bugger's got diabetes and never let him in. Turn your boat round and back to it, wherever it is. Nobody ill can come into Britain, says Michael Howard.
Exactly.
And is this going to extend to their health plans, that they will test people going into hospitals, and if they're ill, they
you
won't
can't go.
But they're bringing back Matron, the Tories. And I do wonder, because the most Conservatives only have a passing acquaintance with the health service. I suspect that their notion of matron is somebody who smacked them when they were at boarding school. I'm afraid I've contracted a deadly virus, matron. I've been very, very bad. Perhaps you might need to punish me again, matron.
It's the launch of the Conservatives' health manifesto, which includes compulsory HIV and TB checks for non-European immigrants. Michael Howard defended the policy's cost implications by offering to test personally the blood of all immigrants. At the end of round one, everybody has 4 points. And we start round two with an item from the wine list at the Great Hall in St. Bart's.
Puyi Fumée La Mariée 2000, Cave Puyi sur Loire. A subtle fruitiness combined with exhilarating fresh acidity gives this urine an unbeatable combination. £18.50.
We thank Sanding from London for spotting that. Jeremy, why is talking a lot of hot air good for the environment?
Is this Kyoto?
It is, yes.
Well, this is weird because the Kyoto Accord has gone through and the Americans don't like the sound of it because it's got a Japanese name. And they want something with a big gas-guzzling name to sign up to.
I thought the Kyoto Accord was a car.
No, that's the Princess Consort you're thinking of. There are people in the oil industry still disputing the global warming, despite the fact that our icebergs are now hot spas. They're saying that there is no such thing. But the scary thing is that people are actually talking. I was listening to the energy secretary the other day talking about the prospects for expanding nuclear power. And the people say the great thing about nuclear power is it doesn't produce carbon dioxide. Ooh. Say what you like about Dr. Crippen, he never used a soda stream.
The amazing thing about the Kyoto Treaty, though, is that never has a treaty aimed lower and yet still produced less consensus. Now, it's the equivalent of cutting down from 60 cigarettes a day to 59. In fact, they've managed to work out as well that the environmental benefit to the Kyoto Treaty is exactly the same as the damage caused by flying all of the delegates over there and giving them copies of the treaty. So we're back to square one. I'll side with America on this anyway. You know, there's no point in investing in alternative energies. Look at wind farming. Now, it turns out the wind has actually been horrifically over-farmed over the last 10 years. And if we keep farming it at this rate, by 2012, there will be no wind whatsoever. And kites will just lie like corpses in parks. Exactly, Lester. Is that the world you want to live in? No, then hit the mines and start digging, hippies.
we are going to have to reopen the pits at some point because we're going to run out of everything else. And all those mines that were turned into wine bars by the Tories will be reopened. And whereas people used to have coal effect electric fires, in the future people will have electric effect coal fires. The two lumps of coals rolled into very thin bars and an ornamental switch on the side.
This week, the Kyoto Protocol for tackling global warming finally came into force. Scientists predict global warming will have a great impact on climate around the world. By the year 2030, people will fly south from Loughborough for 2 weeks in the sun in Leicester. John, why have bishops got their knickers in a twist this week?
Oh, this is the Church of England, and whether or not women should be allowed to become bishops, no way. Anyway, one of the criticisms that some members of the church are having that everything's moving too swiftly. And there's one thing you really can't throw as an accusation at the Church of England, it's that they move too swiftly. Whoa, vicar, whoa. We've only just decided you people shouldn't be eaten by lions. Slow down, one step at a time.
The argument against women bishops is that Jesus only chose male disciples. But I think really the only reason Jesus chose male disciples is that he knew that women would have a hard time believing his rather extravagant claims. Women have met a lot of men who think they're God's gift. They're still vexed about the idea of gay clergy in the C of E. And you just think, well, what on earth is the point in being an Anglican cleric if you're not gay? I mean, the clergy is really only there for those gay men who are too plain to be airline stewards. It's bizarre there's a backlash in... Because I was brought up in the Church of England, and it's not exactly a zealous denomination. I mean, you don't... I couldn't even say I'm lapsed. If you're an Anglican, you don't lose your faith. You just can't remember where you left it.
The General Synod, governing body of the Church of England, has voted to continue its debate on female bishops, which could see women consecrated by 2011. Many critics claim there will be a terrible price to pay for this, namely a new sitcom called The Bishop of Dibley. Eve, listen to this. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. Don't you love it? I'm Loving It by Justin Timberlake. Eve, who's loving the European Court of Human Rights?
Oh, this will be the McLibel pair, I imagine.
It is.
Because you know, they stood outside McDonald's and handed out leaflets that said that McDonald's was exploiting children, ruining the rainforest, and they had to go to court because the McDonald's sued them. Naturally, McDonald's spent zillions on lawyers. And the McLibel pair, I think it was Helen and David, were not allowed any legal aid, so they had to represent themselves. And so they lost, and they went to the European Court, and the European Court said that it was against freedom of speech, I think, that they hadn't been given legal aid to help them in this case.
Yes, correct.
Let me just say timorously that I think McDonald's is not that good. Come and get me. But when
legal aid, Jeremy, tell him it's made from kangaroo head meat. You can say it all now.
It's made from baby seals cooked in their own fear. And I read in the paper it said McDonald's were launching their new bacon on a bagel. And I thought, why is it wrong to put Michael Howard's head on the body of a pig and okay to put bacon on a bagel? What kind of warped mentality is that?
I feel sorry for the innocent, charitable multinational that is McDonald's here, because they had these two people throw these accusations at them that they pay their workers hardly anything and they're deforestating. If you say it with enough confidence, it's fine. Deforestating the rainforest. They throw these accusations around with absolutely no evidence apart from some wage slips and the fact that the Amazon has a big golden M carved into it. It's now visible from space.
The European Court of Human Rights ordered the government to pay damages to campaigners Helen Steele and David Morris for denying them their right to free speech in a fair trial, and it refused them legal aid during their battle against McDonald's. The McDonald's libel trial was the longest ever in legal history. The Burger King say they can match it and will throw in a free Beanie Baby. Alan, why have the horse and hounds gone to the dogs?
The programme will go out on Friday night, by which time hunting will be over, so our audience will be thousands and thousands, possibly millions of people who would otherwise be out tearing animal pieces, now sitting quietly by their old Fergusons in their cardigans, sucking on their briar pipes.
Just the horses.
And this, so it's all over. I mean, by the time we've gone out, it's all over, and by the time the repeat comes on, it'll be back again, because none of the police are going to turn out to patrol it, but it is the end of dismantling foxes.
Well, really, it's the end of dismantling foxes for fun. They will still be dismantled for the vile, vermin-ridden, chicken-eating, lamb-killing, rotten pests they are, but nobody will be allowed to enjoy disemboweling them with doggies. And people are all very worried about I'm a bit worried about the dogs myself. I don't know a great deal about hunting, but I gather that when you don't have a fox, you have something dipped in fox whittle, an old raincoat, that you drag around the country and these dogs go after it. But they won't like that. They will divert from that because you can't tear a raincoat to pieces. So I'm glad I'm going home from Leicester tonight, because tomorrow morning there's going to be millions of dogs running through this county looking for something to take the leg off.
If you couldn't dip a raincoat in fox whittle and tear it to pieces, Vivian Westwood wouldn't have a career.
There's an easy solution to all of this huge argument, though, and that is just to learn the lessons from when pigeon hunting was banned. Because then they came up with clay pigeon shooting, and we can do the same here, just encase foxes in clay and load them into a catapult and fire them across a field. At which point, farmers who will have coated their dogs in lead can fire them out of a bazooka and try and hit the clay fox. It doesn't matter if the dogs hit the fox or not. It's about the sport.
Yeah, well, let's be honest. The Countryside Alliance, they've started saying, well, the only solution now is to get rid of this Labour government. The Countryside Alliance has finally come out as the armed wing of the Conservative Party. That's who they are.
The hunting ban came into force this weekend after a last-ditch legal challenge failed in the Court of Appeal. Following the ban coming into effect, the most endangered foxes are now officially Leicester City Football Club. I'm sorry to say. At the end of round two, everybody still has 8 points. And before we start the final round, here's a cutting from Focus.
Dr. Susan Aldridge explains the ins and outs of sex addiction.
Our thanks to Colin Carter for sending that in. Jeremy, why was there a ding-dong about insurance this week?
Is this Avon are going to be selling insurance?
It is.
This is a nightmare because at least it's a more personal touch. It will be, you know, Tony Blair turning up in person to sell us insurance. Because at the minute, because I've got no job, I'm indoors all the day and you're just victim to whoever, and the doorbell goes and British Gas turn up saying, would you like us to supply your milk? And you say, no, you're all right. Milk comes out the electricity sockets now, and then Pizza Hut turn up and deliver the paper. And people phone up about insurance. People say, oh, Mr. Hardy, do you know how much you pay for your domestic home contents insurance? And if I knew how much I pay for my domestic home contents insurance, I would kill myself. I'm glad you asked me that. I've been meaning to unburden myself of the figures for some considerable time. But now, those people who sell makeup, because makeup is going out of fashion, and thank God for that. Women think makeup looks nice on them. It doesn't. It doesn't make you look nice. It just makes you look dusty. It's like wearing a burqa. I mean, you're not fooling anyone when you don't have a head. They just appreciate the effort you've made to hide it, really. I think women should just take their makeup off and say, look, this is what I look like. Look, men, listen, I'm at the age where my face is starting to look like Keith Richards' scrotum. You just got the nice thing for men is there's now men's cosmetic skincare ranges, but they give them butch names so that we don't sound too effete. Like you get deep cleansing milk called Facial Swarf, an exfoliant called Sanding Lotion, and a moisturiser called All Weather Sealant.
Avon Cosmetics is recruiting 20,000 new staff to start selling insurance and credit cards door to door. Avon first arrived in Britain in 1959, the same year Fidel Castro was sworn in as Cuban president, Cyprus was independent, Russia's Luna 2 became the first man-made object to land on the moon, and the 13-year-old George W. Bush learned to read. John, listen to this.
Money don't get everything, it's true. What it don't get, I can't use. I want money.
That's what I want. Kiri Chikanawa there with money. John, who knows how to milk their parents, but not the price of semi-skinned?
Oh, that's teenagers. There was a big report this week. Apparently, know the price of a mini iPod, but not the price of a pint of milk. They probably know the price of one item and not the other, because they're not constantly bombarded with advertising on huge hoardings of people dancing around in silhouette in front of coloured backgrounds holding bits of milk. Saying, well, this is how much milk costs, nor is there a special U2 limited edition pint of milk.
I didn't actually know that milk cost anything. I mean, a bloke comes by in a van every morning, just leaves it on the doorstep. I didn't know it had a price.
You know that when you win on the cash point machine, Alan? With those four winning numbers.
Those four winning numbers.
I have a teenage daughter, and there is a natural affinity between middle-aged man and teenage daughter, really, because both of you suddenly look much older but still feel like a child, and neither of you really knows what you want to do with your life, and both of you find yourself bursting into tears for no apparent reason.
Research published by ICM shows teenagers have a poor grasp of the cost of living and are more likely to know the price of an iPod than a pint of milk. For the benefit of my own teenage son, a pint of milk costs £500 and you're getting two for your birthday. Eve, who wants us to linger longer in the airliner?
There's two new planes. There's the Airbus, which is ginormous. And not only your luggage will go to Hong Kong when you don't want it to, possibly most of your family will, because you could lose them on the plane. And then there's a new American one. And this has only got 301 people, and you can go on this plane for 18 hours.
Does sound a lousy piece of design, doesn't it? 301. You just know they had this thing on the drawing board. Well, it ought to be 310 or 300, but they've obviously got a bit, and they said, if we just move that over there... Anyway, it's called Boeing. I would never fly in a plane that was called Boeing. It might be very uneasy.
It's unveiling a Boeing's new 777, the Dreamliner, capable of travelling halfway around the world for up to 18 hours without refuelling. Little known fact that the 777 is actually the number of the beast's second cousin, twice removed. Alan, why could burglars soon be having a ball?
Thanks to a shortage of policemen who are running after people who are not running after foxes, there is nobody on the streets to stop burglars. So a ball has been invented. It runs at 20 miles an hour, and it takes pictures of people running away with your goods, appliances, and probably wives. I don't know where these balls are going to be. Are they going to be patrolling the streets? So people say, I really feel comfortable. When I were a lad, there was always a ball going down the street. To catch burglars. I don't quite know how it does it. It doesn't even have any... There was a picture of it in the Daily Mail. It didn't have any arms and legs. If you were a burglar and a ball came up to you, you'd think you were fairly safe, because it hasn't got anything to grab you with. But it will follow you anywhere. So presumably, if you're a burglar and you get home, you have to explain to your beloved or the people next door why this ball is sitting in your front garden. Eventually it will come to the attention of a policeman.
It's the Rotundus rolling robot designed at the University of Uppsala for use on Mars, which is now being marketed as a high-tech security guard. The robot has been designed to see and pursue undesirable individuals. Unfortunately, the last batch were all lost pursuing Robert Kilroy Silk. Before we reveal the final exciting scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
This was emailed to me by my friend Chris, and it purports to come from the New York Times. Bosses of a publishing firm are trying to work out why no one noticed that one of their employees had been sitting dead at his desk for 5 days before anyone asked if he was feeling okay. George Turkelbaum, 51, who had been employed as a proofreader at a New York firm for 30 years, had a heart attack in the open plan office he shared with 23 other workers. He quietly passed away on Monday, but nobody noticed until Saturday morning when an office cleaner asked why he was working during the weekend. His boss said George was always the first guy in each morning and the last to leave at night.
John.
Bill Lennox sent in something from the letters page of the Matlock Mercury. It goes like this. Madam, congratulations to the mindless idiot who last Friday night threw a co-op supermarket into the River Wye at Bakewell.
Eve.
This has been sent in from the Windsor Star newspaper in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, sent in by Dr. Kay McCrone. A San Diego patrolman pulled over a driver and informed him that because he was wearing his seatbelt, he had just won a $5,000 prize in a safety competition. What are you going to do with the prize money? The officer asked. The man responded, I guess I'll go to driving school and get my license. At that moment, his wife, who was seated next to him, chimed in, Officer, don't listen to him. He's such a smart aleck when he's drunk.
Alan.
Well, I'd buy coins. I've got a car one too. And I don't really believe it myself, but you can check it, Simon, by looking at Thursday's Daily Telegraph. David Honan, 32, a street entertainer, was deemed to have created an obstruction as he ran through the centre of York, wearing red Ferrari overalls and holding a wooden steering wheel. He was arrested under the Highways Act for impersonating a Formula One car.
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score, which is that the teams are completely level with 16 perfect points each. And before we leave, you hear some item from Google, emailed in by Mark Lanigan.
Nearly a quarter of women wanted bigger breasts, while 15% wanted smaller ones. The British Association of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, BAPS, said in a statement.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, John Oliver, Eve Pollard and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark, Paul Carenza and Roderick Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.